Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, planet Earth, and welcome to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your hosts every Monday night at 7 p.m. live on HeritageRadioNetwork.org, also archived there and on iTunes. We're broadcasting out of the studio in the back of Roberta's Pizza in the lovely Bushwick, Brooklyn.
And we, if you don't find us through archive, we already said that part, but we are a podcast of all things fermentable. And speaking of all things fermentable, we went to an incredible event this weekend called Foment, put on by
Zach Shulman. Yeah. So huge shout out to him and everybody that participated. Basically, it was a free event at the Brooklyn Free School in Fort Greene neighborhood of Brooklyn. And everybody came. They brought all kinds of stuff. We brought beer and then we brought some kombucha scobies to swap with people. But people brought everything from like water kefir and milk kefir and
different yogurts.
Tapache, sweet potato fly, cashew cheese, bread, beer. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. Tons of kimchi and sauerkraut and beet kvass, three different kinds of kvass. So we met a lot of people. We tasted a lot of great stuff. We went to some good workshops. Angela Davis gave a workshop on milk kefir. She's going to be on the show on May 20th.
We're excited about that.
Yep, and then Evgenia Kim gave a workshop on kimchi, and we've also invited her on a future show as well. So it was very inspirational. In fact, last night we went home and made our first batch of Rejuvelac.
What is Rejuvelac, Mary?
So it's basically it's kind of a starter. You're making a fermented water-based beverage from grain. We used quinoa because that's what we had around. Yeah. And we're going to use that to actually start our first batch of cashew cheese as well.
But you can drink the Rejuvelac.
Absolutely, and that's what we're going to do with it. Yes. We made enough so that we can drink some and then make cashew cheese with the rest or use it as a starter for the cashew cheese. So that's all stuff that we're going to talk about on future episodes. And then, I brought home some water kefir grains, and we just started a batch of that last night as well. So we'll talk about that. There's a guy named Josh that we met yesterday that did a bunch of wonderful water kefirs, and we're hopefully going to have him on as well. So anyway, we're going to have lots of exciting other fermentations besides beer in future shows.
But I like beer. You know what I really like? IPAs. You know what I really like about beer? Hops. Today, we're going to talk about, we're going to get into it on utilizing hops and some of our favorite IPAs. And we have one of my favorite people that I've met through the homebrew scene. We have with us today, Fritz Ferner. How are you doing, Fritz?
I'm good. Thank you, Chris. It's really nice to say.
You're man. You have a blog as well. What is your website for people to find more about you?
Fritzbrew.com. It covers recipes, homebrew tips, beer joins, beer people, just anything that's crafty and beery and that's dear to my heart.
Yep. And Fritz has won a ton of homebrewing awards. He's very well known for your pale ales and your IPAs. But I know that every time that I show up at a meeting, specifically usually the New York City Homebrewers Guild, and Fritz has a beer, it's something that I want to taste because everything that I've ever had from you is absolutely wonderful.
Oh, you're too kind. Thank you.
So, yeah, it's true. And Fritz also teaches classes, which we'll talk about a bit later.
But first, as we talked about last week, we came back from the Craft Brewers Conference and we did a bunch of interviews while there. And one of our favorite commercial brewers who utilize hops really, really well is Firestone Walker. So we have an interview with Matt Brindelson of Firestone Walker, and we would like to play that for you now.
Yep. Here we go. Okay. So Chris and I are here at the Craft Brewers Conference 2013. We're at a place called Black Squirrel, and we're talking with Matt Brindelson and Jesse Ferguson of Carton Brewing. So hi, Matt.
Hey, you pronounced my name right. That's awesome.
I'm happy to do that.
After this many beers, too.
So. Yes. So please talk about how, you guys brew beers in a very unique fashion. You're doing a burgle system, correct?
Yeah, so I know you spoke to Jim a little bit already, but we have three what we refer to as three different oak programs in our brewery. And since the inception of the company in 1996, we started fermenting ales in oak barrels. And we're doing it in the style of the Burton Union.
Primary fermentation,
exactly. And our twist on the Union system is using new American oak so that we impart this really interesting kind of fifth element to the beer, this nice oak character. And that's something that the company has done since day one. So it's very natural for us, and it's at the core of our brewing program. And so infusing oak into beer is something that we're very natural. It comes very naturally to us. And then after our 10th anniversary, we started doing some oak aging. So we spent most of our life as a brewery trying to explain to everybody, we don't age, we ferment.
Right.
And making that a big point because, you know, it was more commonplace to age beers. Then we started aging beers, and that took off for us. And honestly, after 10 years of brewing, our brewery had a little different philosophy than the average craft brewery. We really were all about session pale ales. We were focused on English pale ale, American pale ale. We hadn't even brewed an IPA yet. And, you know, even though somehow, some way our brewery was still known for hops, we were brewing very simple, somewhat pedestrian beers. We felt we were doing that very well, and we were getting a great following locally, but nationally, you know, and we weren't a darling of the beer geek world by any stretch of the imagination, nor were we really trying to. We were really servicing the Central Coast, making very drinkable beers for maybe not so developed craft beer market, you know, our home turf, and really focusing on that. And then after 10 years, we decided to make some crazy beers, and we started doing some oak aging. And I think those beers, the 10th anniversary beer and later Parabola, Succuba, what was originally known as Abacus, some of those beers were the beers that kind of opened up doors for us to the beer geek world, which again, I think we were a little bit like, wow, we had no idea that, you know, people would be that interested in that something so simple as oak aging, because for us, all the technical know-how goes into fermenting a beer in oak. That's much more difficult from a sanitation, from just a sustainable fermentation program in oak is very difficult. Aging an oak to us was like, oh, well, we just rack the beer in oak and let it hang out for a little while, and people get really, really excited about it. And so we've developed that program, again, now for almost 7 or 8 years. And then you spoke to Jim about Barrel Works. And I say, and maybe he mentioned it, but that's really Firestone coming completely 365 degrees around, because when we very first started fermenting beers in oak barrels, many of those first experiments turned into sour beers, and we had no idea we were so ahead of our time. I always say that those first experiments were like mediocre salad dressing, malt vinegar at best, and here you go, you know, 17 years later now we're doing it all over again. This time using wine barrels, trying to incorporate some natural microflora from our region, from the Central Coast, you know, further linking ourselves to the fermentation scientists in our neck of the woods, the winemakers, and trying to make something unique. And again, we're a little bit latecomers to the game. I mean, there are people that have been making sour beer for, you know, the last decade plus. So we are by no means claiming to be an expert in this, but although, you know, Jim may not have told you that his undergrad dissertation at Cal Poly was doing sourdough bread starters. So he actually was studying lactobacillus before he became a brewer, and so he's also quite natural at these sour fermentations. He understands the critters. He spent his whole career defending the brewery from these things, and now he can kind of let his hair down metaphorically and start making some sour beers on purpose, and that's kind of cool.
So I had the Wookie Jack in Brooklyn a couple weeks ago, and you used some debittered malts, right?
Yeah.
So talk about this. I mean, you use two different types of debittered malts for this, right?
We actually use two or three. There's three different malts that we've incorporated in that. Well,
what's the halves, boys? How's the halves?
It's all good.
Yeah.
So there are a few different things that we thought about when we were making Wookie Jack. One is that black IPA was already kind of being done. I didn't necessarily believe in the style more than it being somewhat of a trend for me at the time. I hadn't really gotten into it. So in studying that beer, I thought, you know, I refused to make a straight-ahead black IPA, which everybody was using Carafa, everybody was using, you know, heavy-handed hops. I got it. I mean, I like the beers themselves, but as a style, I kind of was like, you know, we're kind of making shit up now. But when I started researching it a little bit more, I realized that spicy rye plays well in dark beers, and it also plays really well with hops. I mean, some of my favorite hoppy rye beers are like Hop Rod Rye from Beer Republic, very inspirational beer. It came after Wookiee Jack, but I think that Ruthless Rye is a wonderful beer, and it shows that rye as a spicy grain plays well with hops. And so for this black IPA, it just seemed really natural to throw rye in there, and then I didn't want to just use Carafa. So we found Midnight Wheat, which is a roasted wheat product, which is actually even a little bit softer and brings some interesting textures to the beer. We also use a grain from Patagonia Malting in Chile, which is also very much like Carafa in that it's a pearl barley that's roasted to, you know, nearly a black color. So those three malts actually play a part in bringing that dark color without bringing too much astringency. But we think that the Midnight Wheat brings a little extra twist along with the rye. So. It's hard to be original in this business.
It's smooth. A lot of what you get is hot bitterness and roast from a lot of other people's stuff, and they clash pretty dramatically.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think what works really well in that beer is that also at that time we were playing experimentally around with Citra hops, and we were using some Amarillo but very judiciously in our Union Jack IPA, and so I just happened to have extra of those hops, and when we did our first formulation, throwing those two hops together created some flavors that we never expected to happen, and we stuck with it. Hey man, how you doing? Good to see you. I just finished my Saison.
Nice.
Well done, well done.
Thanks.
So, you know, it's funny how these beers happen. And we never did a pilot brew. Very first brew was a 50-barrel batch, 100-barrel batch.
Wow.
On the big system. You know,
do you have a pilot system?
It's our big system. You know, we just go for it. And we were so happy with the first brews. And, of course, you know, you do a little bit of, you know, tweaking after the fact. But that's pretty much original.
So what
recipe.
Are you drinking now?
I'm drinking Pivo Pilsner.
And tell us about that.
That's the latest beer that we've formulated and put into the market as a draft beer. JB may not agree with me, but I've always been a huge Pilsner fan and feel like that there's a real place and a home for Pilsners in the craft beer scene here in the United States. He's itching to say something else.
I'm an ale guy. I'm not much on lager, but you know, but this beer really is nice. It's nice and bright and kind of bohemian.
And we spent a fair amount of time in Europe and in Germany, you know, in sourcing equipment and researching breweries. And so you can't help but fall in love with, you know, German brewing technology and Pilsner brewing. Now, you know, Pilsner brewing in Germany is becoming very monochromatic, much like light lager here in the United States. But the very premise of this very light-bodied beer that showcases hops isn't that different from an IPA. It's just a different type of beer. And I look at our portfolio of beers, and every time we create a new beer, Wookiee Jack's an example, Pilsner's another example, we're trying to fit in beers that fit with the portfolio and not do too much overlapping. You know, there are breweries that just, you know, they play IPA all day long, every day. We're trying to play all these different beer styles, and I think Pilsner fits into to craft tap handles, fits into our portfolio, and I love it, so I don't care. I like it, and I'm drinking it. And this beer, we chose, again, we always have a twist. The twist on this beer is that it's very traditional German lager that uses Weyermann Pilsner malt. It uses 3470 Weinstephan lager yeast. It uses, but then the hopping is where it starts to take a little twist. It uses Hallertau Magnum for bittering. It uses Spalter Select for the flavor hops. And then our little zinger is Saphir hops from Germany that we dry hop the beer with Saphir. So, you know, out here in this part of the world, Victory Brewing Company makes some outstanding lager beers. They make some outstanding hoppy lager beers. I've been drinking them at the conference. And we're actually dry hopping. They do a lot of late hopping with their hop back. But, you know, I must say, if I have to say, you know, Victory is one of the inspirations for this beer.
So. Are you cold dry hopping?
Well, with the lager, I suppose you consider it cold, but no, it's at fermentation temperature.
Okay.
So it's, you know, say about 7 or 8 days into the fermentation, just at the very, very end, as things are just starting to finish up, that's when we'd hit it with the hops.
Are you doing multiple dry hops on it? Like
not on Pilsner beer, but on Union Jack, there's Double Jack, there's three.
But you're a big advocate of short exposure time,
Short exposure time.
Right.
So what is short exposure time?
Mm. Well, again, I mean, ask 10 brewers, you're going to get 10 different ideas on how to dry hop a beer. So the Firestone method is using the hops at fermentation temperature, so right after primary fermentation's done, hopefully there's still some yeast activity to mop up any DO, allow the enzymes there to work on the hop oils, and we're throwing hops in right at the end of fermentation, allowing to sit for about 3 days, and then we discard the hops. So with Union Jack, we'll dry hop on, say, day 4 or 5, allow those hops to be there for three or so days, dry hop it again, let them stay for 3 days, and then right before we crash cool, dry hop it again, just for good measure.
Yeah, just to be sure.
I started to, after taking in the class, you talk about, I actually had a beer shower long ago from, dry hopping our IPA. So now, next time I went up, I did like one handful and then sealed it back up
and let it do
and then let it for like an hour. And was able to feel a lot of degassing, from that. And then
for the brewers out there, I think that what you're saying is that's the perfect time to dry hop. If you throw the hops in, the beer's a little angry and spits at you. That release of CO2 is removing dissolved oxygen, and it's you have yeast activity to protect the beer. That's a perfect time to dry hop. That's why we do it. And the short contact time is just a philosophy of ours, that we don't want vegetative characteristics. We want more oil characteristics. Vinny gave a talk today, though, where he's like, we make some beers where we sit for 7 days, some beers we sit for 14 days, and no one's going to say that those beers aren't wonderful expressions of hops as well, so it's just a different way to skin the...
I thought that Vinny's speech today, what I took away from that was, if you're making beer and you like it, don't change the way you're making it.
That's
because whatever you change in your process, you may think you're trying to make it better or whatever, but you're really just going to change the flavor profile completely. If you've got something you like, stick with it. And you got to live with the good and the bad of that.
And actually you bring up the really good point that if you're trying to create new beers and new flavors, you don't have to find the next best hop. You don't have to find the next best malt. Just change process a little bit, and you're creating a new beer and making something really interesting. So.
Okay, so Matt, going into spring, what is a beer you prefer to drink? What is your favorite beer to drink for spring?
Spring. That's going to change. I mean, right now I'm digging this Pilsner because hoppy Pilsner is, light and bright enough for spring, but it's still got some, it's got some hop character that's fun. This Funkwerk Saison just blows my mind every time I have it. I think that's a great spring beer.
Tropic King or the smaller one?
Just the Funk, the straight ahead, Funkwerk Saison. I just love it. It's like one of my favorite beers. I tell him every time I see him, I think he thinks I'm just blowing sunshine up his ass, but I love that beer. And, I'm a huge Bavarian Hefeweizen fan, and I know that's a summer beer anyway, but as soon as weather breaks, I'm drinking a lot of Bavarian Hefeweizen, and I love Bavarian Hefeweizen. In the proper glass, sitting in a beer garden. Oh my God.
So. All right, so thank you to Matt and Jesse and Kuzme. Cheers.
Right on. Thank
awesome
you.
To meet you.
Yeah, have a beer.
Yeah. Originally we were gonna edit that, but Matt just dropped so much well spoken knowledge. Thank you, Matt Brindelson of Firestone Walker.
And Jesse Ferguson for contributing some questions.
We're gonna take a quick short on Ferment About It, and we'll be back to talk a little bit about all that stuff and Fritz's approach to dry hopping, first wort hopping.
That's on black IPAs.
That's a tough act to follow. I feel like a dog after the Beatles.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be back.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery. In our industrial world, most wines have become brands, but the wines I love are so much more. Fine wine is a civilizing substance that connects us to nature. It cannot be stamped out in a factory. If you're listening to this great show, you probably eat different. I urge you to drink different too. Go deeper. Cane5.com.
you know HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a member-supported nonprofit organization? If you like what you're listening to, go to our website and click that donate button. Become a member and get special discounts, invites, VIP treatment, t-shirts, and more. Support us in our mission to bring you the freshest food content in the nation.
And we're back on for Men About It, HeritageRadioNetwork.org, with our great friend and good guest, Fritz Fernow, homebrewer extraordinaire. Going back to what we just listened to, this interview, Matt talked about rye and how it dances so well with hops, and one of my favorite beers of yours, the Horny Rhinoceros.
That's an interesting beer, for sure, and it's one of my favorites. Ironically, I've probably made about 60 IPAs, and I always mess around with the hops because I just can't figure them out. You know, it's, you know, you put like Magnum hops for bittering, and then you you know, use Citra and Amarillo for flavor and aroma, and then, you know, you mix up the you make the same beer again, but you change the bittering hops, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden, like, the Citra and the Amarillo taste different. It's just, it's insane. It's like, I want to quit, but you always have to make one more IPA. It's, you know, it's like, but the Horny Rhinoceros, for the most part, I've got that nailed down, especially the malt bill and mm-hmm. the hop scheduling. I might tinker around a little bit with the dry hopping schedule, and I try to experiment a little bit with Simcoe. It's interesting. I hate Simcoe when I use it, but when other people use it, I love it. It's something I just can't figure out yet. You know, it's how you're extracting oils from it and IBUs from it. Sometimes it has that cat pee flavor, which yeah. is good, but sometimes it's overdone. It tastes like dried grapefruit, which I don't like. So it's it's an ongoing struggle, but I'll keep at it.
I have a lot of Simcoe coming for me, but I've actually never used it.
So tell your Horny Rhinoceros, what right? percentage of rye do you like to use?
I can break it down into 5-gallon recipe. I don't use like Beersmith or anything like that, but for 5 gallons, what I'll do is about 12 pounds of base malt, like Simple Two Row. Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, I take that back, Maris Otter. And then I'll use 3 pounds of rye. And what I'll do is I'll have my local homebrew shop crush that, because rye is very small and it's very dense.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I get it home again, I'll crush it again. And then as a tip that I got from the good people at Six Point, I use 3 different types of rye. I think they use maybe 4, but I use 3. So I'll use 3 pounds of standard base rye. I use 1/2 pound of Crystal Rye, which has a lovely blonde, maybe about 60 to 80.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll, just so I can say I use 3, I'll use 1 ounce of chocolate rye, which is about 300, 400 or so. And then I'll use maybe 1/2 pound of Crystal 10 just to round it out a little bit.
Yeah. Now, do you use rice hulls when you...
Absolutely. I've never had a stuck mash before. I use the Denny Kahn hose braid method, and mm-hmm. I've been pretty lucky. So no stuck mashes, knock on wood. So
I like it. How many times do you dry hop? What is your dry hopping method, you said? So we talked, or Matt was talking about how, you know, you want to dry hop. He generally does it while it's still fermenting or at the tail end of the fermentation.
Yeah, I agree, because what I like to do is... first of all, I always tell people, be fearless. Like, you might get like a recipe kit from Northern Brewer or More Beer or something like that, where it'll say, you know, use 1 ounce here and another ounce here. But for the most part, at that stage of the game, you can pretty much go crazy and as much as you can handle. For IPAs, I actually like to do my initial fermentation in a bucket. So if I want to use 3 ounces of hops, I like to use hop bags with a few marbles in to weigh them down.
And you generally do pellets or
usually pellets.
Okay.
For your dry hopping.
Yeah. And then what I'll do is usually about after day 4 or 5, when the fermentation is slowed down to maybe, you know, like a bubble every 15 or 20 seconds in the airlock, I'll take about 3 ounces of hops in a bag, open the bucket, chuck them in mm-hmm. With some marbles just to weigh it down a little bit. And then what I'll do is when I get up in the morning, I'll give it a little shake, you know, just to rock it. You don't want to splash or anything. Worry about oxidation. And then when I get home from work, give it just a little rock again. Sniff the airlock.
Yeah. You
know, a lot of people, like, don't admit it, but I'm an airlock sniffer.
I love it.
And, you know, I'll usually let that go probably about 7 days, you know, probably longer than Matt does.
Mm-hmm.
And then... what I'll do is I'll transfer it to a secondary just to let it clean up, and you know, I'll give it a sniff, and I might add some more real flavorful, aromatic hops like Citra or Amarillo. Still toying around with that Simcoe. Maybe I'll use like a quarter ounce to sandwich it in there. Yeah. Like I always tell people, like, you know, some hops are just like over the top, brutal, and their characteristics take over, like Chinook. I've had all Chinook IPAs.
We were just talking about that, yeah.
And man, like, I can have a pint of that, but do I want another one? No. Yeah. But I like to use Chinook for bittering, like maybe half an ounce with a little bit of Magnum. And it that's a scenario where less is more, and it goes a long way.
With your fearlessness, have you ever had any dry hopping go wrong? Like any time when – so I don't know if you all caught it. I'm not sure when he said it first, but he said – Matt said DO, and that's for dissolved oxygen, and which can be bad unless you have something to soak it up.
Yeah, I've had a couple issues sort of off topic, but a disaster once. I dry hopped and the weights that I used in the hop bag I thought were stainless steel ball bearings. Uh-huh. They were not. So
what were they?
must have been regular steel. So when I took them out, I saw like little dots of rust.
Okay.
And when I tasted the beer, it tasted like rust. And it was just like, you were so close. But so far, because when I tasted it before I dry hopped it, it was delicious. I was like psyched for it. And all of a sudden it's like, like face plant. It's like, well, there's 5 gallons we'll never see. But
hence using marbles now.
I love marbles.
Glass marbles.
I go to the kids' store and they look at me weird and says, what are you doing with these? It's like, it's for beer. sometimes they ask a lot of questions and sometimes they just, send you on your way. And it's like, it's New York. Like, guy's playing with his marbles. What the hell?
So I have a confession for everybody. I have never, as a home brewer, I've never made an IPA.
Okay.
I've never made an IPA at the house. The first time I made an IPA was actually once I got the job at 508, I brewed an IPA there. And it was inspired, I think I've said this on the radio also before, it was inspired by just simplicity, like Drew Beecham's talking about the power of one. And I did just a smash IPA. Okay. And then my third IPA there, I finally branched off and I'm starting to use a little bit of Pilsner malt actually as well.
Fantastic.
Kind of clean it up and to showcase the hops a little even more. I mean, just partially Maris Otter and Pilsner.
No, Pilsner malt's a great way to go. It's I find it a little bit sweeter, and it dries out a little bit more. So, as most brewers know, like there's three characteristics of beer. There's yeast and there's malt and obviously hops. And, you want a little bit of malt background to balance it out. But for the most part, you want to have a clear window to let those hops shine through. You buy a nice suit, but you don't want it to overpower like your face and you're the person about that. We want to look at you and not the suit, so.
Right, and the IPAs is about the hops, right?
Absolutely.
And so that's another thing I never did as a home brewer. I never did any first wort hopping. So do you first wort hop?
I do, and I've actually also kettle hops as well.
Kettle hops as well.
What I'll do is
real quick, because I just describe both of those techniques.
First wort hops, you can actually what I do is actually, if I'm making a big honking IPA and want to extract a lot of flavor, what I'll do is I'll put usually whole hops in the mash, anywhere from 2 to 3 ounces, and then what you can do is on your first runnings put hops in the kettle, and people will say, well, isn't that the same as a bittering hop? It's not really, because what you're doing is when that wort comes out at roughly 150 degrees or so, you're extracting a lot of oils, but without boiling it and getting the bitterness out of it. So it's a way to crank out a few IBUs without you get more flavor, but without the bitterness.
Then do you remove the hops from when you do the kettle hopping? Do you remove those hops?
Nope, I just keep them in there.
You just like leave them in there.
Absolutely.
And those go into your IBU calculations.
I sort of use a calculator, but I sort of have it dialed into my system. So it's like, instead of using, if I want to make a 10-50 beer, for the most part, I use 10 pounds of base malt and then whatever, like, specialty grains I want to use after that. Sort of the same things with hops, except for the bittering additions in 60 minutes. Like, but anything after, 10 minutes, it depends on, where I want to go.
Right.
Sometimes I use 3 or 4 ounces at 10 and maybe a few with it flame out, or throw a few more in for shits and giggles at 5, et cetera. It's like I said, it's like IPAs. I've never nailed it down.
Right. But they're always awesome. Whatever you do is
sometimes,
great.
Like I said, sometimes I want to give up, but you got to make one more. Yeah. It's odd, because what I'll do is, like, the week before the brew day, I'll obsess about hops. You know, I'll wake up and say, I'm sticking to this hop schedule. I'm sticking to this hop schedule. And then, like, brew day, I'm sticking to the hop schedule. 5 minutes before, like, you know, the 10-minute edition, I'm changing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know that.
Yeah. But it's ironic because some of the best IPAs I've made were the initial recipes I've concocted, like, 2 weeks in advance and stuck to.
Okay.
It's an affliction.
Going back to first wort hopping, do you ever substitute your first wort hops for your 60-minute edition, or you always do both?
I've done one, actually, and I used maybe like a quarter ounce of Magnum hops, which is a high alpha for bittering. But, yeah, and it's nice. And
You mean for first wort or?
Yeah, what I would do is like I'd use maybe a quarter ounce of Magnum at 60. But what I would do is I'd have like 2 or 3 ounces in, you know, the mash and the kettle.
Okay.
And then I would use like 3 or 4 ounces at 10 minutes and at 5 minutes and it flame out.
Okay.
And what's nice is you get a big hop flavor without that puckering bitterness.
Yeah.
Right.
The scenario with those is you sort of got to drink them quick. I mean, not too bad, but they're usually good for about 4 or 5 weeks and then they start to fade a lot. So,
interesting.
But nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, yeah. Challenge me to drink fast, please. Oh, where are you teaching? You are doing these classes, and where is that out of, and where can we find out more about that?
It's a unique website called sidetours.com, and I think it just started people that wanted to find, give people from out of town, like New York experiences, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you have any sort of talent, whether it's making samosas or dumplings or frying fish or playing jazz, if it's something that you're good at, and you have a passion for, people can sign up for your classes and kind of like snoop into your house and come on down. And last Saturday, I just did, I think, my 9th class.
That's awesome.
And it's interesting. Most people that come to the classes, they don't want to actually brew themselves, but they want to check out the process.
Right.
And what I'll do is while we're waiting for wort to cool down or to boil, what we'll do to pass time is, we'll do a little... beer and cheese samplings and, pair chocolate with stouts and, blue cheese with IPAs and maybe bacon with like a good Baltic porter, things like that. And, that class will last about 6 hours or so when I did traditional brewing. And then I just did my first brew in a bag and that took 2 hours off the day. And
take notes.
And it was cool what was nice about that is it made it more realistic to people who might want to do it and maybe do it twice a year without investing in a lot of equipment.
Right.
It's easy. There's not a lot of equipment that you have to invest in.
Kettle and
a
mesh bag.
The cleanup is ridiculously simple. It was.
Yeah.
I was like, what did I forget to do? It was what's wrong with this? So kudos to Mary and brewing a bag.
Mary converted me, man. Absolutely for the home.
Yeah, Fritz came over and helped me a year or two ago.
Yeah.
Do a brew in a bag. So that was. That was fun. So I'm glad you're utilizing that.
Absolutely.
And introducing more people to it.
Right.
Awesome. We're about out of time.
Yeah.
I'm mad about it.
So thank you so much. Thank you to Matt Brindelson and Jesse Ferguson of Carton Brewing and Fritz for now. Hopefully you guys are inspired to brew some killer IPAs out there.
That's right. And don't be afraid to use lots of hops. Don't, be fearless.
Experiment.
Lots of hops from 5 minutes on and dry hop and go to fritzbrew.com for recipes and shoot me an email. I love drinking other people's IPAs. I usually find they do better job than I do. That's kind of cool. So.
It's total perception.
Who's our guest next week, Mary?
So next week we're going to listen to some interviews from Greg Doss and Jess, I'm totally blanking on his last name, from Y East, talking about the private collection that's out now.
Codhill.
Yes, Jess Codhill. Both amazing guys, very interesting interview. And then we're going to have Danielle and Benjamin from Brooklyn Homebrew on. And they carry the Y East private collection. They have a super interesting story. They're great brewers, all around great people. And we look forward to talking to them next week.
On heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.